The worst movie of all time to some, the best funny bad film ever to others. Where else can you see a child piss on a table full of food to save his parents' life, a popcorn sex murder, and a chainsaw wielding vegan? She's also a witch.
Yeah.
With meth teeth, turn into a pinup girl.
Is it a comedy or an intentional spoof?
No. This was made as sincere, honest to goodness horror movie by earnest, serious people, Robert McFarlane. And well, I'll hear nothing else.
I mean, legitimately, it was. Later on, you will think this is a comedy, but no, it can only be Troll 2.
And I can only be Ben Groves.
And I'm only Rob McFarlane. And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast! That's right, we are doing 1990s Troll 2, often called the worst film of all time. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about why this film is the way it is. Mm-hmm. It is not a comedy. The director hates when people talk about it in those terms.
Right.
For him, this is a serious film. He made it sincerely, but it can only be watched at and laughed. It is insane. But before we do all that, before we get into what we're doing, let's ask the more important question.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing, buddy?
Fine.
Still fine.
Still fine.
Don't want to engage with it.
There's nothing new that's happening. It's just more intense.
More intense. You're going to have an operation on your lung. Your house is falling apart and you're a cunt.
House is fine. House is doing
house
good
is
now.
Fine.
House
okay.
is on the up. House is all right. I'm sorting that out. It's the fucking surgery that's like 2 weeks away that I am absolutely shitting myself about.
Right.
But yeah, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm crying all the time.
I'm noticing that you're in touch with your emotions now.
I hate it.
You've
so
gone from none whatsoever to now being sort of like little emo boy, and I really like it.
In the last 15 years, I've cried 3 times, and one of them was 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Right, okay.
And then since then...
Just not stopped. Oh, you're just counting that as one solid cry?
Yeah. But I'm doing good. It's healthy crying.
Good.
But I'm
you being all in touch with your emotions and shit?
I don't know how to do it. I genuinely thought my tear ducts had healed.
Yeah.
Like an old piercing.
Dude, spoiler, sucks dick. It doesn't get better.
Right, cheers.
It does not get better.
Before I have an emotional breakdown, let's have a quick breakdown of the plot of the film and what we're going to get up to in this episode. I want to teach you about the German word that doesn't exist in the English language.
Got you.
And it's to do with why I love B-movie.
I'm going to be talking a little bit about this specific branch of Italian horror.
I'm going to tell everyone why the film is like this. Mm-hmm. We're going to get into why the film is like this, how it was made, and no one intended this to happen. What went wrong?
I'm not sure about this. Right. I'm not sure anything did go wrong. I think everything might have gone exactly right. Because I'm going to be getting into a couple of things in this movie that blow my mind clean off my tits.
Okay, and then at the very end, we're going to get into, after all is said and done, what does it mean?
What's it really mean?
What does it really mean? And I've got a good one this week.
Oh, same.
I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
But now let's just very briefly, for the benefit of those who haven't seen this film and aren't intending to,
got you.
Just little 3-sentence, what is this movie? What happens in it? I'm going to kick us off.
3-sentence? I'm looking at 3 paragraphs, mate.
They're run-on sentences.
Right, okay.
All right.
Sounds.
I'm going to do them all in one breath. I'm not going to do them all in one breath. Yeah, and because that would be unfair to you.
Yeah.
That would be victimization.
Yeah.
Troll 2, in Act 1, Joshua is visited by his dead granddad, Seth, who warns him that goblins turn people into plants to eat them.
Mm.
So, when his family set off on a home exchange trip to the town of Nilbog and find a meal of green goo waiting, Joshy Boy knows exactly what to do. Grandpappy Seth freezes time, because that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Joshua can stop them from eating it by dropping trow and covering the entire table in his hot, clean child piss.
Why is clean the adjective there?
Because of drugs testing, Ben. I don't know what child piss is in your world, but in my world, it's a clean bill of health.
It doesn't read like that.
Good.
It doesn't
Meanwhile,
read like
his
that
sister's
at all.
Boyfriend arrives in an RV with all of his buddies. One of them, Arnold, is lured into a house by a maiden in distress running from goblins, meets a garden witch, and is turned into a plant trapped in a pot, much like Ben was when he dated that vegan.
I have thoughts about the chase scene through the woods, because I don't think that she lures him into anything.
No.
I think he chases her down and rugby tackles her and then yells at her, "Who are you?" It's like, you've just chased a stranger through the woods. You don't have the right to ask
this
question.
She was joking.
Literally, she's running away from goblins. I'm going to get into it. It's fine. Act 2. In Nilbog, the family is offered Nilbog milk, a thick white health drink pushed by the creepy preacher and the townsfolk. It's like gym bro vegan supplement shake is being pushed on a dude bro podcast. That is such a difficult sentence to say because everything is like a is
this whole episode. A lot of the way that I've lightened the mood,
right,
is just torture the dyslexic while they're down.
Yeah, sick.
This will come up a number of times.
Cool. Looking forward to that. The general store owner behaves like a mental, which, as you will find out later, way less of a choice than a natural state. And we learn that every human inhabitant of the town is, in fact, a disgusting goblin in human form, much like Rob is when he's not dating. When he's not? Okay. That's fine. You're emotional now. There's a joke there. I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it because that would be bullying. And we don't like bullying on this podcast.
Apparently not.
No.
No, just me.
No, just fucking ruining a dyslexic. That will be coming up multiple times. Fucking unreal. The townsfolk invite the family to a feast of food slathered in green slime, which no one finds strange.
No.
Which Joshua delays them from eating again. Elsewhere, the garden witch goblin queen Credence rejuvenates herself with a potion, because fuck it, why not? Then tries seducing one of the friendship gang in the RV using a cob of corn that bursts into popcorn as they kiss.
Now, I'm just saying,
through the sweet corn.
If anyone out there wants to arrive at my door in a full silk nightgown with stockings, rubbing a corn cob on your inner thigh. Act
just
3, with the family just now trapped in the church, ghost Pappy Seth turns up yet again to save the fucking day. Talk about a ghost in the fucking shit film. Words of wise words of wisdom from the afterlife? The power of love? No. The power of a divine Molotov cocktail from the astral plane, which really does make you question the social state of the afterlife, huh? Like, he's just like, guess what I found
that's
in
heaven?
That's
lesson 101.
Anyway, he burns the goblin pope to death so the family can all put their hands on the magical goblin stone from Stonehenge, which is never explained how it got from Wiltshire to fucking America, but whatever.
Don't worry about it.
And they use the power of love to defeat the evil, return home, and find all is well.
Do they use the power of love?
We'll get into it. Or is it actually that they go home and find their mum half eaten in the shower by some fucking little ninja trolls? That's a callback to episode 2 of our podcast.
Ninja trolls?
Elves.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So now, what we're saying is I feel like you've been misled. You've been misleading in this a little bit.
I've been saying trolls.
You've been saying trolls.
And there are no trolls
in this
film.
There's not a single troll in this film.
Do you remember when we covered Elves, the 1980s film about the Fourth Reich, which is a sleeper cell of Nazi agents raising an incest baby with elves to create the super race? And it's not elves, it's in fact elf, and they never use the word elf.
Yes.
This is very similar in that it's called Troll 2, but is not a sequel to 1986's Troll.
Yes.
And does in fact not feature a troll, and nor does anyone ever use the word troll.
Everything is goblin.
Everything is goblin. Everything is goblin.
I don't like that you looked at your clock when you were singing
my
that.
Big clock.
Your big clock.
Yeah.
I didn't like that at all.
Stroke my big clock and anyway.
You didn't need to act that out. This is an audio format.
I know, I didn't need to. I chose to.
Yeah, good.
Listen, I showed you this film years ago.
About 5 years ago, you got in touch and were just sort of like, so listen, have you ever seen Troll 2?
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
So I wanted to bring this because you brought Toxie last week and we were talking about B-movie, and I'm not the B-movie guy. I have very limited B-movie experience.
Yeah.
The B-movies I do know,
this
is one of the top of the heap. For me, it's not the all-time greatest.
Top of the heap of like B-movies.
Right.
This is like B-movie royalty.
And so I wanted to use that and bring that and talk about why I love B-movie. And to do that, we're going to have to go on a bit of a tangent. All right. I want to talk about words that don't exist in the English language, but should. So like the extra enjoyment of having something that's not yours.
Oh.
So like a bite of your partner's muffin or of someone else's partner. Like it's not yours.
Right.
So you're like, oh, this is better now. Because I shouldn't be having this. This isn't my chip. This isn't my wife. That kind of... Right?
Yeah, I can understand
that. Or the way in which time seems to completely slow when the drug dealer is late and says 2 more minutes.
But you know that it's not going to be 2 more minutes.
So genuinely, back when I was a degenerate back in London, I genuinely did begin to wonder if I was the shittest X-Man. And like I had the power to stop time.
Right.
But only in the specific case where I'd been being a degenerate for a few hours.
What,
and
you're
run
waiting
out
for drugs? Yeah.
So, like, can you imagine, like, the scene in X-Men First Class with Quicksilver? And they're like,
I've never seen First Class.
Oh, it's pretty good.
I gave up on X-Men, like,
that's fair.
I think it was X-Men
that's
2 fair. Was the last one
Every
I watched.
Every time they reboot it, right. The first one's mint.
Right, yeah.
And sick. Then it rapidly degenerates.
So it's the opposite of Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Yeah, got you.
Debatable. But yeah, it Quicksilver, but I have to just get shit-faced. And then,
okay.
When do you think the danger roughly is going to be? Let me know 5 hours before and I'll get some in.
That'd actually be mint in Avengers. Like, literally, you've got one line left in a little baggie at the bottom of your pocket, and Thanos is like,
yeah,
everyone's coming through the portal, and all you get in like a real distant shot is just you. Hello? Yeah. 10 minutes. Yeah. Sound. And then everyone stops. You could just walk over, take the glove. You'd fix it.
I feel like there's a gap in the market for a superhero who's the most powerful superhero in the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
But is such a degenerate that they can just never get it right.
That's actually a mint idea.
Right?
That's a mint
like
idea.
Like a John Constantine, but right. An active addict and just unable to get their shit together.
Yeah.
Could that's fix mint. Everything in the universe.
Won't.
Omega level. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
That's the tagline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's not a word for that in the English language.
Okay.
Now, there is a word that the Germans have. Okay. But we don't. And we share lots of things with the Germans.
Yeah.
Horrifically shameful history.
Sure.
Love of meat and vegetables.
Yeah.
Probably both ranked bottom in Europe's sexiest men. So they've got this word, Schadenfreude.
Okay.
I think it's come up way back when. We've forgotten it since then. So I'm going to reintroduce it.
Okay.
It's taking joy in the misfortune of someone else.
Right. Okay.
I fucking...
That's such a... Okay. No. That's fine.
I fucking love that. It's what I keep. It's what I keep my spirits up with.
Yeah.
Watching a toddler trip. My favourite.
That is pretty funny.
All this is to say, I think that you are a far better man than I am.
In what context? Because that's insane.
I think you love B-movie.
Right.
In a pure and honest way.
Sure.
You love the insanity. You love the zaniness.
I love the underdog.
The underdog.
Yeah.
You love the fact that they're trying.
Yeah.
I love the fact that they failed.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. There is a very distinct Venn diagram of stuff that you love and that I love, but for very different reasons.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You love it because they tried. I love it because they put their all into it and got fucking egg on their face.
Right.
And that just keeps my fucking teeth white. I love that.
Okay.
Just watching people eat shit creatively.
It's just disconcerting that, like, we've been best friends for like 2 decades. And now you're choosing the time to be sort of like, I'm really emotional at the minute. Also, I'm an awful human.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially my Venn diagram, my seesaw.
Okay.
On the one hand, vulnerable. Emotional.
Yeah.
On the other hand, awful person. But I'm going to use this episode
right.
to try and prove the utility of that mix of chemicals.
Okay.
And why me being an awful person who's emotionally in touch with their emotions
right.
is actually an omega level superhero who just can't get his shit together.
Right.
So I want to talk about why this film is the way it is. I
sure.
want to talk about Italian horror. I want to talk about a bunch of that stuff.
I got you.
But I feel like before we do, we have to acknowledge that this film is fucking insane.
It's the best. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. It's one of the best things I've ever seen because it leaves me thinking about it for weeks after.
Yeah.
And it's for the wrong reasons, but it's for the right reasons. Mm. It's for the right wrong reasons.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So it sets you up with little nuggets of things that you then have to be like, I need an explanation.
Yeah.
Did this really happen in real time? I'm going to give you an example. You mentioned in the breakdown when Grandpa freezes time, because apparently that's what he can do.
So the ghost of his recently deceased grandfather
snaps his fingers and freezes time.
Keeps turning up in the plot.
Yeah.
And then, they're about to eat all this goo-covered food.
Yeah, yeah. But he freezes time. He literally snaps his finger.
It's worse than that. He looks this child in the eye.
Right.
And goes, your family's lives are in danger.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to do something.
You got 30 seconds.
And the kid goes, I don't know what to do. And he goes, you've got 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Clicks his fingers, stops time, and then fucks off.
Yeah. So,
no pressure.
No, that's great. But I need you to really think about this scene.
Okay.
Let's think about everything that's going on in the world, in that moment, right?
Goblins are real.
So the goblins are real.
Mm-hmm.
And only the kid knows about it.
Yeah.
His dead grandpa keeps showing up.
Yeah.
He's
somewhat
proven,
too persistently, one might say.
Yeah. He's proven that he can interact with physical matter.
Yes.
He can interact
oddly.
With this realm and he's fine. But often it chooses not to and just shows up as a face in a mirror for no reason.
Yeah.
Laziness. Anyway, so he all of these things and these rules have been set up previously. We know that life after death exists.
Yes, there is an afterlife.
We know that there is a heaven, but we're not certain whether there's a hell yet. I'm going to bring this up momentarily.
Okay.
Because I feel like it needs to be said.
Right. But what am I missing with the dinner scene?
The dinner scene, Granddad snaps his fingers and freezes time.
Yeah.
First off, I didn't know that ghosts were wizards or whether Granddad was like a wizard.
Was he a wizard in his real life? And so therefore his ghost...
Yeah, this is what I'm thinking.
...gets the wizard powers or did he get them after death?
This is what I mean. So that's a question that I'm pondering a lot. And right. And I'm not lying. If I'm driving and listening to music, I have to pause the music because I'm genuinely trying to process. So did he spend time in his real life figuring out how to freeze time? And that is transferable after death.
He was a cocaine addict and he figured out when he clicks his fingers.
Sniffs his last line. Makes the call. And then he'll just snap his fingers. Whilst he's doing that, he's like, you've got about 4 hours.
Right, the 30 seconds that kid had to figure out how to get his family to stop eating the food.
He had hours.
Was 4 hours of granddad time with him just pacing, going, you'll be here in a minute.
Yeah, that's
be
it.
Be here in a minute.
That's what it is. So there's that aspect of it. But then we need to look at it from the opposite angle. We've seen it from granddad's version. We've seen it from the kid's version. And that's fine. You.
Yeah.
Are the dad in that situation, right?
Okay.
And you're about to drink the green drink. Mm. Mom's about to take a bite of a green donut and the sister's about to eat the green corn on the cob.
Oh God, I see where this
is
going.
You are frozen in time.
Yeah.
Whilst me, the child, I'm stood at the window talking to an invisible spectre that I'm claiming is my granddad. You are aware of where I am in that room when time freezes.
And then suddenly,
when the second that time unfreezes, I'm stood on the table pissing on the food that is in your hands.
Yeah.
I'm a teleporting child now.
Yeah.
In your world.
Or I'm having a stroke.
Or you've had a stroke.
I've got a neurological disorder.
This is what I'm saying.
And my child is pissing
on my
food.
It's a shared hallucination that we've had. That a child has existed at some point and can teleport across the room whilst pissing. That's an insane thing.
Yeah.
How are the family not freaking out about that? They're all like, oh God, it stinks. I'm so hungry. I need to tighten my belt because I'm so hungry. Not I have a fucking teleporting child that is pissing on the table after talking to invisible my dead dad. Like, that's insane, right?
Yeah, everything
that's
about...
That's one scene.
That's one scene.
And that shit haunts me.
And every single scene of this film is like that.
It's 90 minutes of those questions.
Yeah.
It's amazing, but fucking, it's going to change your life.
There are so many scenes where it cuts to a character doing an thing.
Yeah.
Like the sister, Holly.
Yeah.
She's just got a workout scene in insanely tight lycra.
Ridiculously sweaty for a
17-year-old girl. She's literally head to toe like she's just come out of the swimming pool.
Yeah.
Benching about 10 pounds twice.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And the mum walks in, watches her for a disconcertingly long amount of time.
Yeah.
And then just smiles and closes the door.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, that's a thing that happened.
Yeah. That's just parenting. That's just good parenting.
There's a moment where the family having an argument in the car.
Yes.
And the sister and the mum get into it a little bit. They're talking about the boyfriend. And then the mum's like, Joshua, sing for us now. And
sing that song I like so much.
Yeah. And he's like, mum, I don't want to sing. She's like, fucking sing. Mm. And then he has to start singing. And then they all join in, but no one's in time.
I'm going to put you in that car, mate.
Right.
You're the sister. You're like, my boyfriend was an hour and a half late and we left anyway. I fucking hate my life. Yeah. I don't want to be on holiday. Your mom is yelling at you, being sort of like, fucking buck up your ideas. We're going on holiday for a month on a house swap to a tiny village with 26 people. Anyway.
Called Nilbog.
Listen, I'm bored of this shit now. Buck your ideas up. You're not going to ruin my holiday. Joshua, start singing. Sing that song that I love. And that kid starts singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat.
Yeah.
This is meaning that the woman that you're currently engaged in an argument with, you're already upset enough.
Mm-hmm.
The woman that you're engaged in an argument with's favorite song is Row, Row, Row Your Boat. That is clinically insanity. That is clinically insane behavior.
The actress who plays the mother, there is a documentary about this film.
I've not seen it. I've wanted to watch it for a while, but I knew that this was coming up, so
I
haven't watched it yet.
She is not well contemporarily.
I mean, there are
clues. They go round her face, her thousand-year stare. They go round to her house and they say, look, there's this convention coming up. All the cast are getting back together for like a big anniversary. Do you want to come? And she's like, no, that'll be difficult for me. And they're like, oh, okay, well, would it be impossible? She's like, yeah, it'd be impossible.
Right.
And they say, well, if there's... what would have to change in order to make it possible?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I just want to go to a place where this can all stop and no one knows that I am there. This town is so noisy. There's a constant noise. It's just constantly playing in my head. And they're like, oh God, what noise is it? And then she just starts screaming at the top of her voice.
Wow.
And then the actor who plays the father,
yeah,
and the actor who plays the son, just you just see them having to back away, being like, okay, well, glad we checked. Hope you're well, Margot. Lovely to see you.
Bye.
Bye.
That's intense. She wants to go back to Nilbog, mate. She wants to go back. She needs a town with 26 people.
She loves this film. And she thinks it's a legitimate classic.
It
and
is.
She watches it regularly.
Good.
And compares it to, like, Casablanca.
She should.
And I agree.
She should.
I agree. Now, speaking of Casablanca and the continent, this is an Italian film.
It
is. So the way that this got made is written by director Claudio Fragasso's wife.
Yes.
Rosella Drudi.
Uh-huh.
But they thought the film would perform better if it was called Troll 2, because nobody was going to go see a film called Goblins.
I mean, loads of people went to go watch a film called Troll.
Loads of people did.
Loads of people.
Enough that they thought, well, we'll just pretend it's a sequel to that because it's basically the same, right?
Yeah.
And it was produced by two Italians, Edward Salui and Joe D'Amato. Joe D'Amato is an Italian exploitation director, right?
Yes.
And he's notorious for, he's got a quote, that the profitability of films is more important than their entertainment value.
Got you.
And in keeping with his production philosophy, many of the components of the film were created for free or no money. It was like, the less we spend on this,
yeah,
the better for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this Italian production came over to Midwest America and just went, we'll make the film here.
Yeah.
And so it's an Italian horror movie with an Italian horror movie structure,
yeah,
bones, aesthetic, all of this, but done with American actors, so you don't necessarily clock that it's that.
Yeah.
And the Italian horror I've seen, I could probably list, I don't even know if I have seen an Italian horror film.
Suspiria.
Nope.
One
of those ones I've always been desperate to watch and know I should watch, and know it's my own fault for not having watched, but like, I never sit down and go, do you know what I'm going to watch tonight? Suspiria.
Like a Fulci movie or Argento?
Nope.
Okay, fucking hell.
Like I'm completely...
This is exciting because it means that I get to sort of open up a whole door and we can just run with that because that's going to be really fun. So the Italian horror that we're watching right now, though, is not entirely Italian horror. It's a specific branch of rip-offs, mockbusters, and knockoffs. And this stuff happens...
Oh, like landfill films. Like, we're just making this for a buck, and then...
It's similar to, but it's more like unofficial sequels that sort of go off on their own thing. It's normally done as a bit of an homage, or it's done as a bit of a collaboration between something small in the Western civilization.
A bit like the spaghetti westerns were in the 50s, but
that kind
horror.
Of thing where Hollywood and in Italy were doing the collaborations and swapping movie stars. Fine. Studios were swapping stars between and stuff like this.
Okay,
it's a similar thing. With no money and no big names in it whatsoever.
Okay.
It's a similar thing.
Right.
Similar, such a... The West. I'm going to say the West, meaning Hollywood.
Hollywood, yeah.
Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I'm going to use Europe. Italy as Europe because we're kind of guilty of it as well for a few things. In Seminoid being a key example. Where we take a concept and we just sort of flip it, push it out.
I suppose we were in a time before globalization, right? So if there was a big hit in America, it might not be being distributed in the UK for a year. So there was a window
exactly
for you to very quickly make a rapid turnaround film
and
get it out in the cinemas in your territory before
the
actual hit came over the Atlantic, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So there's stuff like this, but also you've got to think as well. So the Italian studio culture, it's built upon like production of popular genres. So anything that is exploitable, anything that can be churned out quick as fuck, like clockwork, on the cheap, is just boom, 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 which is great. Now, how do you get it out that quick?
Yeah.
With no marketing, no nothing. Slap a two on it. Slap a two on it. There's a couple of examples. You got Zombie 2, which is like an unofficial sequel to Romero's Dawn of the Dead.
Nice.
You've got Alien 2, Alien 2, which is on Earth, which is a real movie.
I need to see that.
It's awful, but it's fucking amazing.
I need to see that.
There's La Casa.
Right, The House.
Yeah.
Probably a sequel to House. Not House,
House
MD.
House has got sequels. There's like six House movies.
That was one of those VHS we had that I just never...
Mate, you need to get
never
into
bonded
it,
with. We rewatched Fright Night, the 80s one, the other day, and it's fucking awful.
Yeah, it's bad.
It was bad.
Yeah, all of them are bad. But there's all this stuff that's going on. So this branch of thing. Essentially, what they do is they write a movie, they churn it out quick as fuck, cheap as fuck, and then go, that could be Demon Knight 2. Could be Evil Dead 5.
Right, okay. You know what I mean? And then retroactively decide what
Night
franchise
of the Evil
it fits
Dead,
into.
You know what I mean?
Nice kind of shit. Night of the Evil Dead's a good
shout.
They
mix still. It's a whole thing. But it's that entire branch of horror now has sort of like a weird cult following.
I mean, if it's anything like Troll 2, then yes.
There's fucking hundreds of them. And they are
gorgeous.
All as amazing as each other. They are all as terrible as each other. They're all great. But again, though, I look at those guys...
Yeah.
And I see scrappy little underdogs who have written a film that no one's going to fund, one's going to market.
I see where we have different perspectives here, but we're also looking at different things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're looking at the studio, and I'm looking at the American actors.
You are,
And here's the thing. So let me give you an example of how that studio structure and that ethos to filmmaking played out in the case of Troll 2, because it explains so much of why this movie is the way it is.
All right.
So they didn't really learn English. It was very broken English and hand signals.
Yes.
Is how he directed the film.
Yeah.
And how they spoke entirely with the English cast.
But this kind of makes sense, though.
Massive language barrier.
We're British, so when we go abroad, if someone doesn't understand what we're saying, we just say it 1 decibel louder until eventually they give us what we want.
Yeah, or we put on a pretend accent.
Yeah.
We speak English, but in a French accent.
You get three tries. Excuse me, wait, where's the taxi? Quoi?
Yeah. Excuse me,
mate.
Where is the taxi?
Where's the taxi? Quoi? Excuse me. Where is the taxi?
Yep. That's a choice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Just saying.
So, Fragasso, the director, they were not explaining themselves well. The cast was primarily assembled from residents of nearby towns.
Who the background actors and stuff?
No.
The main
cast arrived at the audition believing that they were auditioning for extras.
Amazing.
They all got main parts.
Fuck yes.
George Hardy, who plays the dad in this, he was a dentist.
Yeah.
With no acting experience.
Yep.
Who was given one of the film's largest speaking roles. He is a delightful man.
Yeah, he's incredible.
He is gorgeous, warm, funny, co-parents his child with his ex-wife. No one has a bad word to say about him. But before, after, and during the making of Troll 2, full-time dentist.
See, this is what I mean. Like, can you imagine going to see the dentist, right, and you're getting a filling done, and he's like, well, there you go, you're all done and dusted, you know, you can settle up out front, and that's all cool. What are you up to this evening? Got much on? Oh, fancy dinner, that's great. Right. What am I doing? I'm getting chased by trolls around the house.
No, it's better than that, because for the documentary about the making of this film that I watched, where they talk about how this film was a massive failure, when it was released,
right,
but grew up on to get a cult following.
Right.
He will tell every patient about this film.
Fucking amazing.
He will speak lines from the film.
Yes.
And he will encourage them to watch it.
I'd pay so much money to get a fucking root canal.
Right.
The dentist who plays the dad in Troll 2.
But they all thought this was their big break, because they were all aspiring actors. They were like, this is an actual film.
Yeah.
Connie Young, who plays Holly, Josh's sister.
Yeah.
This is a direct quote. Somebody called me and told me that I got the part, and I was beyond thrilled. I was like, this is it. I'm going to be a movie star.
Okay.
This is the beginning for me.
Amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
The script was not given to the actors in full. It was given to them scene by scene.
Yeah.
It was written in the same broken English.
Fucking amazing.
That the Italians had.
Yeah, incredible.
And then when they said, oh, we'll correct this to make it, they were like, no, you are actors.
Yeah.
You do not have control of the script.
Oh, mate, they went Tarantino with it. They were like, I'm paying you to say my fucking
exactly
words.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's exactly that. And that's a direct quote from the director, who was quoted at the time as saying, like, I was surrounded by Americans.
Yeah.
I'd grown up my whole life watching Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would get into debates with the cast about what Americans would do.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd go, Americans around here would never do that. And they'd be like, I am an American from around here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would know, he's like, you don't get to
No, shut the fuck up. You're an American from around here who wants to be an actor. That's not a real American. All right?
Yeah.
That's almost Italian.
All of the special effects are, all of the special effects are from local charity shops.
Right.
One of the gang of friends from the RV is in a t-shirt for the entire film, with a yellow t-shirt with a logo on the front and a big design on the back. Mm-hmm. And halfway through the shooting schedule, that just got destroyed or lost.
Yeah.
And the director was like, just go to the shop, get another one.
Yeah, just get a yellow t-shirt.
Just get an yellow t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a scene where one of the actors is getting turned into a plant.
Yep.
And so what they did is they took his shoes, took the laces out.
Right.
Got a, like an electric drill and just drilled his shoes to a plank of wood.
Right.
So that he could then put his feet in, which they would then dress the shoes with all the plant matter.
Mm-hmm.
He then got laced into the shoes and just left there for 10 hours. And when he complained, the director, they interviewed the director, and he's like, and he was always complaining. So we designed a mouth prosthetic just that he had to wear in the scene as well.
I know exactly the guy that you're on about. This is mad.
It's only on there because he would not stop complaining.
That's
so I just said,
amazing.
Wear this, and then he couldn't complain.
That's insane. I fucking love this guy. That's a true underdog. That's it. That's a problem solver. That is right there.
So they're all going in with like hopes.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeing bits of the plan.
Right.
And they're working with somebody who's got hundreds of credits to their name, and they all trust.
It's not always a good thing.
Right. But from their perspective, as just civilians on the street, they're like, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
We've never been in a film before.
He's made 4,000 films this year. And it's only June.
Right, exactly. So they're all there thinking that this is fine.
Yeah.
Odd, but fine.
Yeah.
They're having arguments all the time, but fine. But it is not a professional picture. The shopkeeper, I mentioned it in the breakdown.
The only good actor in this film, by the way.
He's not acting.
Yeah, I know.
He's not acting.
That's what makes him the only good actor in this film.
He is literally a mental patient on literal day release.
That's fucking incredible.
He checked himself in. Apparently, he was really struggling to figure out what kind of eggs to have in the morning. He was like, I found myself, it was 2 p.m.
Right.
And I'd spent 6 hours trying to decide whether to have fried, poached, or scrambled eggs.
I can fucking relate to that so much. Right. It's unreal. Do you ever wake up and be like, I want eggs, and then you're stood in front of the cooker and you don't know whether to use a fucking frying pan or a saucepan?
This was him.
It's the most annoying thing.
Yeah. This is him for 6 hours.
So he checks himself into a mental hospital after this.
A friend checks him in because he's obviously in a state.
What was the time difference between him getting the initial, what eggs do I have? Because I'm at the moment, I'm at the stage where I've got frying pan in one hand, saucepan in another, and I'm...
He woke up in the morning and it was around 2 p.m. So if you're spending more than 2 hours...
All right.
You're in the danger
zone. I think mine's about 15 minutes at the moment.
Right, you're good.
Cool.
You've got a buffer.
I've got an hour bandwidth. 45 before you have to step in and go, you know what, mate?
Yeah. So he was smoking...
Let me get an Italian director on the phone.
Huge amounts of marijuana that he was smoking at the time. During the documentary, he gives the camera crew a tour of his cuddly toys.
Right.
Now, when I say his toy collection, it's not like collector's items. It's the sort of thing you find outside a charity shop at midnight on a Friday night in a black bin bag.
So collectibles. What are we talking about? You're setting up one thing and giving me the exact thing.
He gets day release and he finds this casting thing and he goes in and he gets given the part of the shopkeeper.
Amazing.
He's not interviewed very much during the documentary. Most of it is him talking about how much he fucking hated the kid playing the lead.
Fair.
Right?
Fair.
It's all he wants to talk about. And he talks about the scene where his character has to force feed Joshua. And he goes on at so much length. And this is a direct quote. I wanted to ram the fucking spoon in this kid's mouth. I fucking hated him. I felt like I was trying to fucking kill him. So you've got an amateur child actor in his first role. You put him in a room. You've strapped him down. And then you've got a man on day release from a psychiatric prison with a fucking metal spoon. Be like, stick that in that kid's mouth.
I fucking hated him is the wildest thing to say.
About a child.
Can you imagine Joe Pesci saying this about fucking Macaulay Culkin at Home Alone?
Right.
I fucking hated that little kid.
Right.
Every time I tried to get in that house, he was just one step ahead of me.
I feel like of all the members of the cast, he's the one that's done the least forward movement. And what I mean by that,
is he still trying to figure out which fucking foot to put first?
He's clearly still in a certain place. And look, we've had our mental health struggles, right?
Yeah.
And I was watching this. I was thinking about the amount of regret, because they do talk about, you know, the film came out, it wasn't even called what they thought it was going to be called.
Yeah, because it's all about fucking goblins.
Right. The film was called Goblin on the script.
Yeah, mad that.
Right?
Mad that.
And then it changed late in the day. It never got a theatrical release. The VHS cover has a werewolf on the front.
Which is fucking amazing, by the way.
A photo of a child who does not appear in the film.
No.
And they're obviously all pretty devastated. I mean, the George Hardy, who plays the dad, he sort of talks about watching it, and he said he got about 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
And he realised that the film that he thought he was making was clearly not being made.
Yeah.
And that he, personally, was an awful actor. Connie Young, who plays Holly, the sister.
Right.
She was talking about reading the reviews and just how not only was the film bad, but all of the reviews took personal care to point her out as being an especially low point. So she's like, I know that's people say it's not personal.
Yeah.
But in my case, people were like, Connie McFarland, who plays Holly, is fucking awful. So
okay.
And it's been released as well. So people would come up to me in the street and be like, oh, you're from that piece of shit film that I wasted 2 hours of my life on.
And who are these people? Who are these people? Shut the fuck up.
Right.
If I ever bumped into anyone from Troll 2, I'll tell you what, the dad from Troll 2, he goes on to make a film with Greg Sestero from The Room.
He does.
Now, this is the fucking, this is like my Avengers Age of Ultron. You know what I mean? This is the bringing together of two massive fucking B-movie stars into one movie. It's like putting Felissa Rose and Barbara Crampton in the same movie. I would not be able to go to the cinema for it, because it would be, I'd be a mess the entire time.
Just translate for some listeners, they're horror movie stars that Ben likes.
Yeah, they're like B-movie fucking queens, final girls.
Massively famous for some.
Yeah.
Never heard of for most.
Godlike.
B-movie
scream queens. They are like untouchable. Creme de la creme. Top
so they're
top
in
top
your Avengers. Up.
So these are my Avengers, right? And then you've got Greg Sestero,
who's in The Room, famously terrible bad film.
Arguably the worst, same level worst, as this. Yep. Exactly. And then you've got George Hardy, who's
in this.
And they go on to make a film called Cyst, where George Hardy plays Dr. Guy.
I need to see this.
Dude, I'm telling you.
I need to see this.
It is fucking incredible. It's disgusting
for
all the right reasons. Hilarious for all the wrong reasons, but you've got two B-movie titans sitting opposite each other in a diner. It's my Pulp Fiction.
It's Michael Mann's Heat for B-movie stars.
Legitimately.
Pacino and De Niro in the same movie. You fucking insane.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. But for me, I'm like, George Hardy and Greg Sestero, excuse me whilst I come.
Here's the thing about George Hardy and the kid who play, the guy plays Josh in this, the little boy. The star of this plays the little boy Josh. He went on to make the documentary that I keep referring to. It's called Best Worst Movie.
Yeah.
And it's about the cast's slow acceptance of this being an absolute piece of shit that's been a millstone around their neck.
Yeah.
But it then developing into a cult, funny, bad movie.
Yeah.
And some of them embracing that and finding a huge amount of catharsis in it. And if I think about, like, I've done some fucking stupid... I had a Hitler mustache for like 3 weeks when I was 9.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know what this means.
So,
where are we going with this? What's just happened?
Talking about my Hitler mustache, Ben.
Okay,
get on board.
Cool.
So, do you remember when we were kids? Maybe I was a bit older than 9. Basically, the very first...
It's just going to turn out when you were 24.
No.
When we were kids, we were 32 years old, just running around with Hitler mustaches.
I know I was small because I fit in a trolley, which is how it happened. I got in a trolley, and I allowed my friends to push me down a hill.
Right.
It was great fun.
Right.
I looked fucking mint.
Okay.
All my Jackass dreams were coming true, even though there was no video camera.
Got you.
There was no way of documenting it.
Yeah.
We were doing Jackass. That was the game.
Okay.
Do you want to come play Jackass? Yeah, cool.
Do you want to play Jackass?
Yeah.
Cool.
That was the game. The game was the TV show. I lived on a hill. The street went up, and then at the top of the street, the hill continued going.
You need to put your right arm down, because you're telling me about the time you had a Hitler mustache and you're doing this a lot.
So,
and I know it's an audio platform, but it's making me uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, I'm going to make direct eye contact while I Charlie Kirk this.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
The hill continued going up.
Mm.
Big lawn grass thing with a concrete path going up the middle.
Right.
And that was the park. You'd go all the way up. It was a big park.
Cool.
So we stood at the top of the hill with the trolley. I got in. They pushed me down. mint.
Right.
Until the park ran out.
Okay.
And I hadn't noticed that there was a big old curb at the bottom.
Okay.
About three or four times the height of the trolley wheel.
Right.
So the trolley comes to a sudden stop.
Okay.
I do not, because I have mass and mass retains momentum.
Sure.
So I go flying forward until I am stopped by my top lip on the front of the trolley.
Right. Okay.
Because teeth are curved, the only thing that gets pinched is the skin underneath my nostrils.
Right.
To my top lip.
Okay.
Which splits two vertical lines of the trolley grid.
Right.
Into my top lip.
How the fuck were you sitting in this trolley? Were you like ass up, face towards the fucking grill?
No, I was sat. I was sat like cross legged.
And you were that fucking bendy that your face sort of like you transformed.
Yeah,
because
my knees went
down into the fucking front of the trolley.
My knees went forward, hit the front, and then my head continued into the grill. And I gave myself this little fucking scabbed on Hitler mustache that I couldn't get rid of.
Okay.
And I remember walking around school for weeks.
That's fucking amazing for a start. Like, that's an incredible thing. That what comes from this, though, Rob, is what makes me love Troll 2, is because now I have questions that I don't feel like I can answer without having a physical example. I'm going to steal a trolley.
Okay.
You're going to get in it.
You're going to do some science.
I'm going to do some science. You're going to get in it.
I'm not the right size anymore. We need an oversized trolley.
No cop-outs now. Right. I need you to get in it and show me exactly. No, I won't push you down the hill.
We'll go Tesco's after this. I'll get in a trolley and I'll demonstrate.
I need to go to Tesco after this.
Right, there we go. Job done. But okay, that's probably my first time I remember feeling like deep, hot shame.
I have an example for this.
Right.
That's hit me and it's a weird one.
Okay.
Because it sounds like
hot embarrassment.
Yeah, it sounds like it should be like a fun, like quirky little story.
God, he's going to take a dive.
No. So there's a pub around the corner from my house called, I'm not going to say what it's called.
Mm. don't dox yourself yeah, that's on a your full, own show.
Yeah, full doxing.
So I was hanging out in SY15.
That's a Shrewsbury postcode.
It is.
That's far enough away to not be a dox. That's good. So the pub around the corner from my house, it had an outdoor seating area. It's got your main doors to go into the actual pub.
Yeah.
An outdoor seating area. And there used to be like some side doors where there was like a mini bar. Ooh. Like a little pub counter where you'd go in, you'd get your pint, you just walk straight outside. Same as you're going into the pub and out. It's also like full of snacks and they had like a little tuck shop thing in there. Mm. Me and one of my next door neighbours, we must have been about 10 or 11. I saw a bunch of Parma Violets and some crisps and sweets and shit and I was like, that's a sweet shop. I'm heading into this thing. It's next to the pub. It's a sweet shop. We go in. Barman comes out and he's like, you're all right, boys, what are you doing? And I was like, you got any Gobstoppers? And he was like, no, not really. We don't really keep them because, you know, it's a pub.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, my dad's just sent me in for some Parma Violets and two pints. Don't know why I said it, but it came out and he was like, your dad sent you in. And I was like, yeah, my dad sent me in. And I just put a tenner on the counter that was like my pocket money for the last 4 weeks or whatever it was. I put a tenner on the counter and I picked up the Parma Violets. And I thought it would be a funny joke that me and my mate were in there. And he was like, I'm not going to give you fucking beers, you weirdo. This guy gave us beers.
No.
And then we had to walk outside of the pub, but we were two children that were like,
yeah.
What the fuck do you do
with a beer?
With a beer when you're 10 years old and you walk out to an outdoor seated area where there's tons of people there and you don't have a dad?
No.
The weird.
You're just there.
I didn't know what to do because A.
Oh, God.
I was too young to realize that lying's not really that bad. as long as it hurts no one, it's not really that bad. But so I didn't realize this. I just thought I'd committed the worst crime in history. And I was stood there with my mate. I was physically shaking and I was like, I don't know what to do.
These are illegal. This is illegal.
We literally turned around, faced a wall, downed a pint of beer each and then just left feeling like absolute shit. For like 3 days after that, I was pretending to be ill so I didn't have to go to school because I thought my next door neighbour would have told all the teachers and I was going to get a fucking bollocking or I was going to show up to school and fucking FBI were going to be waiting for me being like, excuse me, are you the Parma Violet beer boy? But the thing is, right, is I've never told anyone this story because it is absolutely mental.
But also, I wonder if you've never told anyone this story because subconsciously it happened at the right age.
Yeah.
Where there's a little bit of you that thinks they might still turn up and go, are you the Palmer boy? He's confessed.
Are you
He's
the Palmer deer boy? I hate it. I hate this whole thing. And I'm still embarrassed about it to this day. Even when I was in like full swing alcoholic, I never went to that pub because I couldn't out of sheer shame. There was times when distant family would come over and were like, do you want to go to the pub? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's get in the car and drive to one that's miles away. And they're like, but... That one. I'm like, no.
No, can't go to that one. Can't that was it. Ruined.
Oh, no, I got banned for being, wild night. Ooh. It was crazy. I've never been back.
Right.
Never.
Hot shame.
I can never go back. It's a weird thing.
Right. We've got, like, regular listeners will know, because I've spoken about it before, but, like, the time I put myself through a window after a psychotic sex and drugs fueled psychotic breakdown and then set fire to a 15-year career. Like, yeah. Things go wrong, right? Yeah. And you have that period of hot shame.
Yeah.
Where, like, you're convinced that everybody knows that you're the Palmer Violet beer boy.
Or the guy that accidentally devotes a year of his life to...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Ooh. That's the kind of thing.
That's, yeah, that one.
Where that's you a weird one to say out this. That might need to be an edit. Just going to say, okay. See how I feel in an hour.
Yeah.
Can listen to this on Patreon if you want, buddy. There you go. That's a little advert in the middle of the show for you.
Ben told a story that we're not willing to share for free.
It's a quid.
It's a quid.
It's a quid.
It's a quid.
Kind of adds context to the story. And then the high-function alcoholic just became full-time alcoholic.
My favourite part of this story that I hope you don't mind me sharing, and I will edit it if you don't.
Cool.
Is that when you found out and you told her that she and you were breaking up and that she should come around to collect her stuff, you then spent the next 24 hours moving all of the furniture to the top floor of your four-story house.
It was the middle floor because the stairs were the steepest. So you walk in at street level was the top floor. You'd walk into the kitchen and then it was real steep stairs down and I managed to drag a sofa, the bed frame, everything that I could. Into the middle, floor.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good. And so she inevitably, if she were to ever listen to this, would have that experience of hot shame. And I want to talk to people like her and like you and like me about why Troll 2 matters and what it really means.
Okay.
Okay. Because there will have been a time that the actors in this were ashamed and embarrassed. And feel like wherever they turned, people would see their faces and see people who had failed, fucked up, got it all wrong.
Yeah.
At the age of 37, I have done loads of those things.
37?
Yeah.
You're so much older than me. It's unbelievable.
I know. A whole 3 months.
Don't you forget it.
But it feels like it's going to last forever at the time.
Yeah.
And this film... It's a weird analogy to make, but this film is not one decision made by one person with the benefit of the full picture. It's a string of daily performances.
Yeah.
And if we think of your weekly, monthly, annual decisions as scenes,
right,
and your life as a movie, we have all at some point looked at our life and seen Troll 2.
Yeah.
Because like the actors in this movie, we don't know what the fucking film is about.
Yeah,
we haven't seen a finished script.
Yeah.
We're on set with people who are mentally unwell.
Unpredictable.
Or too young to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Or speaking a different language, not necessarily a spoken language, but a different love language or a different life language.
Good save, xenophobe.
Right. Each day, you work on the script that's been apportioned to that day, and you hope someone somewhere knows what they're doing.
Yes.
And when all is said and done, the film will make sense.
Yeah.
But I've had three big conversations with good friends this week who've watched the latest version of their movie and realized that they are in Troll 2. People who I love dearly. Some I only know recently. Some I've known for years. They're all sat in the rubble of their plans for stardom, feeling foolish.
Right.
And small and failed. And it is awful. It's bad now. But one day, I hope, because it happened for me.
Right.
And it happened for you. And it happened for everyone involved with Troll 2.
Yeah.
You look back on it and you can laugh about it because you'll one be able to tell somebody about your Troll 2 life and laugh with them about it. And it will bind you closer together.
Yeah.
And so although I watch B-movies... Because of schadenfreude, because I love watching people fail. It is truly from a good place. because I get to see people do what I did. Try an impossible dream.
Okay.
Get most of the way there before ending up in a fucking mockery.
Okay.
Because failure is the one thing we all share, right?
Without a doubt. And right? But the thing...
And this kind of failure is it's low stakes, it's fun. And at the end of the day, everything is broadly fine.
Yeah.
You know, okay, you tried to be a movie star and it didn't work out, but you're still a dentist and everyone fucking loves you and you're successful and your daughter's mint. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I see exactly what you're saying wholeheartedly. I think it's a very, very lovely sentiment. I'm going to sit on the other side of the fence.
Ooh.
And I'm going to say
you're
that
gonna go, fuck people
that are in Troll 2 and they were sitting in the rubble and they were like, fucking hell, what have we just done?
Mm-hmm.
That shit right there gives me nothing but fucking respect and admiration because
same.
I'm looking at someone
same.
That dove headfirst into a dream.
Exactly.
Gave it their all.
Right.
And fucking hell, if that is, whether it worked or not, does not matter.
Doesn't matter. They tried.
It doesn't, I don't care about that at all. This is why I love B-movies, because it's the underdog story of someone stepping up to the plate in the fucking Major League Baseball game, taking the biggest fucking swing that they've got in them. And I don't care whether you hit the ball or not, because fuck me, that swing was mint, mate. That was absolutely blinding. Good shit for you. I'm struggling to pick up the bat. But I've got you in front of me, leading the way. Yeah. It's like driving through the night, right? You're in a dark fucking forest. Your headlights are so dim, it is unbelievable. But off in the distance, you see someone driving just in front of you. You see their red brake lights and you're like, that's someone on the same path.
Yeah.
That's someone trying something that no one else is going to do that. And that gives me a weird fucking sense of like comfort.
It's the we're both right.
Of course.
Because you're right. Now you mention it. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course I love that they tried.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact they failed brings me comfort because I feel like I am.
100%. Right?
But I'm not mocking them for trying.
No, of course
not. I envy them for trying.
Dude, you've tried shit, you've failed, and you're just back on the loop. It's just a fucking circular thing until someone eventually finds the right exit in the dark woods to get them out of the fucking dark woods.
Yeah.
We're all just on that, like, it's like it's a non-stop in circle thing. Our friendship group.
Yeah.
I watch those guys try things day in, day out, do seemingly mundane things to those, but they are the biggest fucking inspirations for me.
Yeah.
We've got friends dotted around the fucking country that we like interact with on a daily basis, whom I fucking adore. And every time that someone's like, simple, dumb shit.
Yeah.
Someone posts a meme in our Discord and I'm like, you know what? Fuck you, mate. That is actually, you've just made my week.
Yeah.
You've just
made
my week.
Our Discord's a lovely place. And I urge anyone hearing the sound of our voice, go to our social media, go to Instagram, go somewhere there.
Yeah.
Click on the little link at the top. Find the link for Discord. Come join the conversation. Everyone's welcome. Because Ben's right. The people in there warm my heart. This is all too wholesome. Can I torture a dyslexic?
You can.
Okay.
You can.
So in this movie, it is revealed in shock and horror that the name of the town, Nilbog,
is Goblin Backwards.
Is Goblin Backwards.
Did you notice that when he's looking at it in the mirror, they haven't flipped the image?
No.
So it still says Nilbog.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing that exists.
It's good, isn't it?
Favorite thing that exists.
I was just curious to know, and I'd love you to be able to do this.
Right.
Obviously, for Joshua, the town of Nilbog is a danger to him.
Yes.
Because his antagonist is goblins.
Right.
You live in Telford.
Right.
So what would your antagonist be?
Drofflets. Drofflets.
Gotta stay away from those drofflets, man.
It sounds like a rain droplet with an accent.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Like it whispers on its way down.
Drofflet. I live in Broseley.
Which would be Yelzorb.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not entirely sure what that could
be. It sounds like a sequel to Tubular Bells. Mike Oldfield album.
Mike Oldfield.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean.
That would be my nemesis.
Yeah, I know.
I need to move away from here, otherwise he's going to do another fucking album. And no one wants that.
Tubular Orbs.
Oh. Then I had some other towns. And these are for the listeners, because I need to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Glen Elg. Yep, that's a town in Scotland.
Glen Elg. So Glen Elg.
Glen Elg, okay. Yeah. And then Not Reffin.
What?
Not Reffin.
Not Reffin. Reffin.
R-E-F-F-A-N.
So Naffa. Nafferton.
Nafferton.
Okay, that's cool.
I literally just opened the map and was like, doop doop
doop. You can just never go. Any reviews out of fucking Nafferton are just sort of like, meh, it's fine.
Yeah. But that's it. That's all we've got time for. I would like to do Comment Corner.
Was that a game?
That was a game.
Did I win?
You won.
Okay.
You won all the points.
That's all I care about.
No Comment Corner this week because we're a bit short on time. Mm-hmm. We are going to hang about after the end of the episode for our dear Patreon listeners.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you don't know, we've got a Patreon. It starts at £1 a month. Yeah. It's all good stuff. We got watch-alongs. We got exclusive content. We got exclusive video content.
We're doing more watch-alongs. I think we need to do a watch-along for Troll 2 because there's too much to get into.
There is.
All of my notes are in universe and they need tons of context.
Let's do a watch-along this week.
I'm in for it. Perfect. Let's do that.
We need to do Friday the 14th.
You mean part 2?
I mean, I assumed they just went along in date order.
Right.
So I thought it was... Friday the 13th, 14th, 15th.
Yeah.
I imagine that they're at a certain point, they're going to hit 31st.
It's just a long week for you.
Yeah.
That made me irrationally angry.
I know.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the end of the show.
Guys, thank you so fucking much for hanging out with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. We love you so much.
We really do. Now, to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know that a lot of you listen on a Monday because we see the numbers. And so Ben is going to thank you for the hour of your week that you've given us by giving you a little Monday motivational pep talk, wrapping up every thought, every theme, every feeling in Troll 2 to get you through your week. While I just tell you to do what society and the goblins tell you to do, which is consume.
We were talking earlier, fail up or fail down does not fucking matter. If you fall flat on your face, does not fucking matter. If you fail to a point where you're like, this isn't really working, it's a slow fizzle, whether it's a big burn, whether it's a fucking huge crash out, none of that shit matters. The only thing that matters is that you stood up, you did something, you put your fucking heart and soul into something, and the result doesn't matter. The effort was there. Look at it this way. I've got a fucking tattoo on my leg that says Wagamami. That was hilarious at one point. That means fucking nothing now, but that's on me forever.